Nearly the end of January, isn't it? Gone quick, eh? And this is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, yesterday, I mean, you know, with everything else that's going on and this being cancelled and that being cancelled and this happening and that happening, well, some people, I didn't, but a lot of people missed. It was actually yesterday was National Holocaust Day, 80 years celebrating, can't really celebrate it, can you? Holocaust Day, and one of the things I've always said, and we've had lots of people on the show, we're up to, 1,817, I just checked it, shows now, is dope. Sort of people write sort of history books. We've had quite a few this year actually already for children and stuff like that. There isn't, I think, a book about the Holocaust that really does it in a way that perhaps younger people could understand it. And it's become forgotten. I know, and I said this on the show before, when we were growing up in our, you know, under 10s, my parents used to sit and make us watch BBC's World at War, so we knew back in the 50s, obviously everything was still pretty fresh and pretty new, and we knew some of the stuff that had happened. We'd see, they wanted us to see some of the stuff that happened, to see the film of the people going into the camps and stuff like that. And I think that sort of thing has been forgotten in this day and age, but you know, it's one of these things that books for children, poignant books that can sort of teach and amuse all at the same time, are a bit lacking in some ways. But my guest today, he's sort of not just found that niche, he's found it, explored it, and expanded it. He is a first generation American, son of a Holocaust survivor. So there's a link there, you see. A masterful attorney, a seasoned negotiator, an engaging speaker, indefatigable marathon runner, and now he is a guest on my show. Because on the show today, I have the one and only Stephen Joseph. Hi, Stephen. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me in such a nice introduction.
Thank you. I sit here for 5 minutes before I phone people trying to work out what we're doing. You've written some wonderful books, but these books, they're not sort of a niche, if you like. It's not just, it's like my YA book. I know when I did my YA book, people said, well, what, it's not YA. I said, yeah, but it's people of all generations. And I had one family where three different generations read the book one after the other. I said, it's for 10 to 92 was the eldest person I had reading mine. And yours is the same. Yours can be read by anybody. It's funny. It's poignant. And it makes people think. And if you've got all that together, you know, you're going to attract the attention no matter whether they're adults or children. Is this something you sort of set out to do?
Yes, definitely. No, definitely. Because, I have my adult books and my children's books. And actually, the adult books, a lot of the chapters could be read by children. And the children books could definitely be read by adults and appreciated by adults. And the children books I write intentionally for the adults to like find stuff in there that kids won't even know. So it's so much fun to do that, where you could, like, the adults like get their own laughs that kids don't know about. Just for example, because you're British. And my illustrator's from Nottingham, England. I have my Snoodles series, and Snoodles, Cadoodles, Poodles, and lots of noodles. Herbie Snoodleman invents the Snoodle, which runs on noodles, and you can even go to ramen only and fill up your car or your Snoodle with noodles, and then go home and get a nice bowl of noodles, and everyone's happy. But the thing about it, the Snoodle, there's like these newspaper clippings, and one is that this Snoodle mania, the Snoodle is bigger than the Beatles. and you have Herbie Snoodleman walking across Abbey Road with four
Oh,
stools.
really? Oh.
Yes.
Oh, how
Yes.
cool is that? And
Yeah. So I and that's part of the treat working with my illustrator, that like he comes up with stuff and I come up with stuff and it's like so much fun. And he's like, it's a surprise. I'm not saying, oh, I want Abbey Road. No, he just does it. And it's like, oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So that's it's so much fun.
I mean, that's one of those iconic pictures of the crossing that everybody knows. I mean, even now, you get people just queuing up to go across that zebra crossing there. So, yeah, I mean, it's great that you're able to bring that in. But what about your other range? I looked it up. The noun crankiness, fussy and
Crankiness.
fussy and eccentric disposition. But you have got a dinosaur. Is it a dinosaur? What's
Yes.
your, is it a
Yes, that was my
Crankisaurus or
first
something?
book. Yes, the last surviving dinosaur, the Tyrannocrankosaurus, and saurus is the Yiddish word for problems. So
Ah,
growing
okay.
up in my home, I was
Yeah.
first generation American, and everybody complained, all the relatives complained about the saurus. You think you have saurus? If I had your saurus, I'd be doing cartwheels. Nobody could outdo my saurus. It was like the saurus Olympics. So and so I created this little dinosaur, and how all humans evolved from this dinosaur, the Tyrannocrankosaurus, and the Tyrannocrestosaurus, kvetching, complaining. And that's why when humans are born, we come out cranky, we come out crying, you know. So that's how it all started. And the funny story about that is, like, okay, I did one book, wasn't planning anything more, but somebody, some critic, said, oh, he's not talking enough about overcoming crankiness. And that was all about embracing our crankiness and finding our strength through crankiness. So I started a blog on my website, StephenJosephAuthor.com, and I wrote about how, like, the common crankosaurus, that we all get cranky, and it's just like you see it, you know how to deal with it, and you deal with it effectively, as opposed to and I call it the common crankosaurus because you might have a common cold because you have two a year. Common crankosaurus, you might have two or three in the morning alone. So, but by recognizing it and making it a common thing, it's like, you know what? This is like everybody. It's not just you. I'm like, woe is me, and like I miss my train, and my kids are giving me problems with. It's everybody.
Course
It's
it is, yeah.
everybody. It's so common, and just and because of that, you don't have to like think like it's get beaten up by it. And how could you learn from it and be, and deal with it effectively? So that was the start of all of it.
It's interesting because one of the things I've, oh, since my 40s, were back in the 1990s, sort of things like that. Every year I sort of, not like a bucket list, I have a bucket thing I have to do that year, including like you've done. I did four or five London marathons in costume and stuff like that in
Oh,
my
wow.
sort of late 40s, early 50s. And that was the thing there, and writing the book and doing getting some short stories published, and stand-up comedy routine and stuff like that. I've done written children's musicals, and every year I try and do
Wow.
something. Well, this year I want to bring back some words that people don't say anymore. Crankiness is a great one, but the one I've got, one I've picked for this next month, is instead of saying that, well, the term for the day after tomorrow is actually a word called overmorrow. So
Overmore.
that's my word for February, that I can have
Okay.
a different word every month that I'm gonna try and
So
bring
right
back.
now it's the pre-overmorrow.
Yes,
And then there'll be the post-overmorrow.
I over-morrow, and if it was the day after, it could have been under-morrow, I guess. I don't know. Perhaps that isn't the word, but it should be.
And then you could write a book, you know, don't be in the present. You know, be in the moment, be in the present.
Yeah.
No, I'm in the overmorrow.
Yeah. Yes.
What's the overmorrow?
Yeah.
Not today.
Could get that into it, couldn't you? Your books, you know, if you said the sort of ones you've done, but the one that's just come out is the second one of the Zoodles, isn't it?
The Snoodles. Third one. Zoodles in Space.
Right.
Episode 2, the Zoodles Strike Back.
Episode 2, that's what it called me. Okay. The Zoodles Strike Back. What does that sound like? Let me think. The Zoodles Strike Back. Rings a bell, that title, doesn't it?
So there was Snoodles, Cadoodles, Poodles, and lots of noodles. And Snoodles in Space, the Snoodle, the Zoodle, Cadoodles, and One Happy Schmoodle. And this is the Zoodle Strike Back.
So, see, this book, even though you know, it goes through stuff, it does have a moral come meaning, doesn't it? It's ultimately about love and... But you do it in a fun sort of way. Do you find that it's like I say that if people write, you know, an illness or perhaps something that's happened to them growing up, you know, all sorts of things, when they put it into a fictionable thing, even though it's their story, they make it into a story that people can read. People reading it put them who've been through that sort of scenario, put themselves in the place of the character, and thus they become more involved. Do you find that people reading your Snoodles books, they read it as one thing, and the humour and everything, but at the end of it, it does leave a mark, make them think, etc. on it. Is that what people have said to you?
I do want people to relate to the different characters. And one of the things that I love, that I really like to write about or have characters that are involved in, or just not involved in, but they actually experience is redemption. So like in the first book, you have Sour Krudelman, who had the Krautmobile, which ran on sauerkraut and made everybody cranky. And then in the second book, he invents the prickly peppered purple propulsion powered pickle.
I'm glad you said that, right?
You put it in a snoodle, and you could go like 10 times faster than the speed of light. And that's how they were able to rescue the family members. So like he was also a hero. Like at first he was like, oh, like, oh, you know, he invented a stupid car. And then in the next book, and I love it when like a light bulb goes off in my head, was I was watching Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I've seen it a million times, but I was looking at this, and you know, those spoiled kids who touch things and eat things they're not supposed to, it doesn't turn out so well for them. And Charlie's a good boy and he gets the Chocolate Factory at the end. And I was thinking, wow, like that must have been really tough on those kids. There was a media circus, a frenzy. There was the like paparazzi, the TV, the newspaper crews. Everybody wanted to find out what happened. And these kids probably were shamed and humiliated and felt like, oh boy, like, you know, like they're the joke of the town, but they're only kids. Mm-hmm. Poor these four kids, you know, what happened to them?
Yep.
So I wanted to write a story that made them the hero. So I have Frimpy Frumpy Froodle, who's and Wimpy Winy Woodle. They're the children of Grumpy Grimy Grudelman. And Frimpy Frumpy Froodle has a fitsy witsy pop-a-doodle. First he fits, and then he whips, and then he popped. And Wimpy Winy Woodle had a swizzly twizzly slime-a-doodle. First she swizzled, and then she twizzled, and then she turned into a bucket of slime, which is not very good. Mm. And kids, of course, made fun of them, but they overheard a plot that would make everybody into willy-nilly noodles and dilly-dally doodles, and they help save the planet from that poor, terrible thing that would happen. We don't want willy-nilly noodles and dilly-dally doodles, of course. Right. So they became the heroes in that book. So,
so that's one of the things, isn't it? You know, you have your book where every child can be a hero. You know, it's not just, yes, as you said, not just Charlie. It's all of them can be a hero in their own right.
Yes, and even if they slipped a little bit, or they were looked like, you know, maybe different and made fun of, that they could come, they could, like, they end up getting the keys to the city. They, like, they're heroes. So want to show, you know, that hey, you know, and also just making the point, like, you know, bullying and shaming and all that, and you know, people make mistakes, you know. Yeah. Just and kids do things that they regret, so they have an opportunity to turn that around, and these kids do.
And other things, of course, you know, messages within the stories, is environment is definitely one of them.
Yes.
And the other thing is education, because I know you're installing the love of museums. You're like yourself in New York. My grandparents used to take us up to London. It was only a little short train ride from Wood Greens into London. And we used to go up there, or go on the underground on the tube up to there, and, you know, go to the museums. Natural history, or the history, war, or Victorian
Natural
Albert.
History.
Yeah, yeah.
I love those places. Yeah, we would go all the time.
Yeah, and that's all something that kids don't have. They don't, unless it's sort of all singing, all dancing, they don't go to look at it for what it is. And I know it's something that you do within your books, is install the love of museums.
Yeah, so in the first Snoodles book, Herbie Snoodleman invents a Snoodle, and with his successful Snoodle empire now, he opens up the Snoodle Cadoodle Art Museum, the first museum of noodle art. And in the next book, with the prickly peppered purple propulsion power pickle, and space travel, Sour Krulemann opens up a museum of space travel. And in the third book, because of the gruel, which was another polluting kind of vehicle, ran on gruel, and was being dumped in the rivers, and the kids got the zoodles to put vacuum doodles over planet Earth and vacuum up the gruel out of the waters to clean up the waters. So and then they open up an aquarium and a water park.
Okay.
Just at the end.
Because I know, you've done these. What's the one I saw that you were looking to look at future projects? Escape from Snoodle Traz. Zoodle Traz. Okay.
Zoodle Traz. So yeah, so that's music themed, and that was inspired. My illustrator Andy Kay said, "Come," like, he's also a musician, and he released his first album, Leap of Faith, and it was this great album. There's not a bad tune on it, and there was music on it that I just heard the guitars and the tunes gave me the story. So there's Break Free, a song called Break Free, where it's like landing on the planet almost, and then breaking free, and then Lost Souls in the Dark, where they're flying through space. I just hear it in the guitar.
Yeah.
So the story came from the guitar, and just the fact of the title, you know, Lost Souls in the Dark, and it has like a saving kind of, like, we're going to save these people. So I just got the story. Just, he releases this album in November. This goes back to 23. I wrote it in 24. And then I got a story. It just like leaked out. And the funny thing about that, you have Swifty Swoodle and the Duopadoodles
right.
Do this gazillion $1 million tour, and Cloodle the Grand Roodle on the planet Zoodle. He has his own band, Cloodle and the Grand Roodle. So he reads about it on the planet Zoodle. Go, wow, I can make a gazillion dollars. So he goes to Earth with his band, and he kind of sucks, you know, like, and everybody boos him off stage and throws tomatoes at him. So he wants revenge, and he puts a couple of our heroes on Zoodle Trash. So now we have to figure out how to free them. They're now stuck in Zoodle Trash. Is like a very bad
one. So that's one of the things in the book, isn't it? The books as well, you encourage kids to rise to challenges. And there you go. These people are stuck, ready to escape in the next book. So that's good. It could be a double, you know, both come from both sides, from you reading it and then the kids getting out of it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So much fun.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love them. I sometimes get... you know, like mystery or detective writers on the show, and you sort of say, well, you know, how did you come up with the idea? And some of them just put their hero, heroine, whatever, in a situation and say, right, now get out of that. Wait for the characters to tell them, you know, what happened and how they get out of it. And it could...
I run, and let me tell you, I do my writing pretty much when I run. Yeah. I'll go running,
yes.
and then I have a thought. And I have the characters, and then they start talking to me.
Yes.
And it's going, oh, yeah.
I know.
Just watch them, and then
totally,
I go back. And I
exactly,
just...
totally what you mean. I used to have the same thing, especially in my short romance stories. I used to get an idea, characters come along. I'm on a sort of, you know, 5 mile, what have you, training run, 10 mile training run, and suddenly I've got to stop, you know, a little piece of paper and a pencil, jot down a word, and then you get in the car and you can't read a blinking thing you've written.
Yeah.
But that's it. I mean, that's the big thing we've always had on this show, that no matter how people plot and plan their books, They have no say in the matter. The characters come along. Minor characters want major roles. You know, some even want their own book. You know, and that. And you have to follow what the character tells you.
Yes. And the most fun I had running, I rewrote Cinderella. So I have this chapter in Cranky Superpowers called Cinderella Crank It Service. And the prince had been turned into a frog by the evil witch, and he was like looking for food, and he sees a fly in Snow White's lips, and he goes to eat the fly, and it's like a kiss, so he turns back into a prince. They start dating. And do you know that Snow White was living with 7 little men? You know, like that was a problem. The prince, like, he called them little dwarves, and she goes, no, they're not dwarves. They're 7 cute little men. And eventually they break up, and he's brooding in the palace. And it's like when I was running, it was just like it was my parents talking. Like, my parents were the king.
Yeah.
My mother was saying, you know, a prince that used to be a frog can't be so picky. You know, it's just like... And Snow White came out with an album. She has a beautiful singing voice, you know. And even there's a movie, Snow White and the 7 Dwarfs. And, of course, that gets the prince all pissed off because he kept calling them dwarves and she kept correcting him. And now she has a hit movie.
Oh,
that pisses him off even more. You know, it's just like, oh,
wonderful.
God.
Wonderful. When's your next one? I mean, how long has this third one been out now? Not that long, is it?
The third one came out officially in September.
Oh, right.
And the next one is going to be hopefully out, and because it's with my illustrator, Andy, and he's busy writing away or drawing away. I'm hoping by... like early summer, you know, maybe earlier. So
great.
The main thing, the process takes a little bit longer because This is one thing for anybody publishing kid books and they want like beautiful colors and everything like that. I had a situation with the second book. I'm going to the Oscars gifting room where like I'm bringing my books to sign it for Oscar nominees. And I had to get books printed. So I went through, I'm not going to mention companies, but the first go around cost me $25 a book. And it's like, oh, geez. You know, I can't sell books for $60. And the quality was terrible.
Yeah.
So then print on demand again, like $14 a book. Quality was like, not so good. And still too expensive for, because you have to sell it at like a high price that no one could afford it. So then I went to China and I had it printed in China and then shipped here. And in China, beautiful poster quality print, beautiful colors, like, you know, like A++ quality, you know, just like everything you better than you could even imagine. It's $1.50 a book.
Oh my goodness!
$1.50, you know, so
crazy.
And that is $1.50 for shipping. So it's $3 a book, and then for cost of warehousing, and I can actually sell it because otherwise, you know, the problem with my first book was like 30-something pages, which is kind of typical for kids' books. But then all becomes a graphic novel. And the last two are like 60, and the 60-page book, when you're doing the you need the paper, you need the colors, you need everything like that, it could be very expensive, and that's the only way to do it. But if you ever want a really great kids book, unfortunately, China is the place to go.
Thank you. Actually, I have when you were saying about Cinderella, I have a children's book ready to have its the pictures with it. That was the 2 years ago thing. I wrote a children's story called the Eighth Dwarf. That's because we only hear seven, but there was one called Lost, which never appears because he's lost all the time. Anyway, time is beating us, Stephen. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you to have you tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books. So over to you.
Well, there's a lot about me, but we don't have that much time. But you could find out all about me by going to StephenJosephAuthor.com. What will you find there? Of course, you find my books, where to get them, which is great. But on top of that, I have an award-winning blog on crankiness and everything else that's going on. So if you want to be entertained, you could be fully entertained by going to that blog. And if you happen to be a lawyer, I'm a lawyer, and I have even a lawyer blog because I'm in the process of doing a lawyer book, The Defense Can Now Rest. There's a book, F. Lee Bailey, saying the defense never rests. And I'm all about the defense being able to rest. They should be able to rest because they never rest. They deserve some rest. So I have a blog on that.
Well, Steve,
because that's what I do. I have a day job.
There you go. Stephen, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Really fascinating.
Well, thank you so much.
Really
happy.
Enjoyed it. And I'm sure your books are going to not just bring happiness and smiles to faces, make a lot of people and kids think. So thank you so much and good luck with the books.
Thank you. Thank you so much again.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. What a great chat, eh? My guest today, Stephen Joseph. And as he said, StephenJosephAuthor.com is his website. Great stuff. Really interesting stuff, books, everything, all about the different various bits. Really good. I love doing these sort of shows. Anyway, that's it. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. But until then, as always, I have one thing left to say. Don't forget.
Blow away the cobwebs and stop yawning. A little cup and sorcery is magic in our morning and in the afternoon or in the evening too. Cheese up, pour yourself a cup, tickety boo. Tickety boo, isn't that nice? All a cup of tea that makes you feel good twice. One love for two, tickety boo.